The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
It's Tuesday, July 17th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I'd like to have an adult conversation. If you were somebody who is like the media that just wants to throw Donald Trump under the bus and just can't separate anything, is that everything is bad, today's show is not for you. If you are somebody who thinks that Trump can do no wrong, today's show is not for you. Now, for the 70% of America that is left, that is just trying to figure out what the hell is going on, let's have a conversation. Every time I think about everything whenever I talk about Donald Trump, I think about how each side is going to pull out one thing, and that's all they're going to hear. And so if I had to write a memo for the left, or if I had to write a headline for the mainstream media, it would be this: Beck blames media. But that's that is a kindergartner headline. That is not a headline that is written by anyone who wants to understand. Let me start with the media. The media is so convinced that they are right. They are just so convinced that they understand. And I, in some ways, don't blame them. They've lived in a world where they've gone unchallenged all the way from college. If you believe the progressive story, if you believe what most journalists are taught in school, well, who's throwing you up against the wall? Everybody you respect, everybody you've been around, thinks the same way. So what are they going to teach you? You're right. They're just misguided or not educated enough or just flat out stupid. When you get to a point to where you think that other people who disagree with you are traitors, you're not going to listen to them because they're traitors. You're not going to listen to them because they have nothing to teach. And that means you have nothing to learn. Well, I beg to burst the bubble for the media. They have a lot to learn. And what they're doing today let's just assume, I'd be really cynical. Let's just assume what they want to happen here is an impeachment of Donald Trump at best. Because you have some people now starting to say on the left, where's the military? It sounds to me like they're calling for a coup. Let's just say that that's what they want to happen. They just want this guy impeached. They want him out of office. They want him to resign. They don't care. They just want him out of office. What you're doing is you're actually driving more people right into his arms. Because you've already sold the people that you were going to sell. And your behavior over the last 2 years has been so despicable that people who you could have captured are long gone because you're not fair. I mean, you'll notice that the Tea Party didn't start the day after the inauguration or the weekend of the inauguration. You didn't. No, that didn't happen. It was the policies. But you've made this personal. And I understand that. I mean, I can understand. He made it personal. He's made a fight against me personal. I haven't made it personal about him. Although I think I was going down that road because I was so angry. And I was so... I just couldn't believe it. And then I realized what I would like to teach the media. You have to work with the world that you live in, not the world that you want. You are so desperate for the world that you want that you can't have it any other way. And that's not just Donald Trump. You did this before with Barack Obama. You wanted it so much that you were not going to let anything in that could possibly disrupt it. See, you think that Donald Trump is a racist. You think that Donald Trump is possibly a Nazi, authoritarian, whatever. I can understand how you might view it that way if you want to do baseline thinking. But now that we have had a few years to watch him, there might be something more. There might be something different. For instance, I'm the guy who said, I think Barack Obama might be a racist. Now, that's all you focused on. You didn't focus on the next line where I said, it's not that I think he... No, he just has this deep-seated hatred for the Western culture. Now, you immediately took that line and made that into Glenn Beck's a racist, because what is the Western culture? Well, it's white. Well, that's what you were trying to say. I didn't believe the Western culture was white, but... You did. I think Barack Obama did. And the reason why I believe that is because I understand what the radicals teach in universities. That it is the white man, it is the patriarchy, we're now in postmodernism where there is no truth. And the reason why we can't really take science, we can't use reason anymore, is because that came from the Enlightenment. So we don't use science. We don't even agree that there is a real universal truth. It's your truth. No, you're not a man. You're a woman, because today you identify as a woman. I'm sorry, but there are X and Y chromosomes. You're not white. You're black, because today you identify as black. Really? Okay, so if I identified... No. Well, wait a minute. Where is the truth? You said that I could identify. No, not everyone can identify. And the reason why they can say this with a straight face is because there is no truth. There is no objective truth anymore. It is all about the dismantling of the Western way of life. I don't see President Obama as a racist, because I've spent a lot of time trying to figure that man out. And as I said, on the day that I just blurted out he's a racist, I immediately knew, not that this was going to be, some big deal, because I went back to the studios and everybody's blood had drained out of their entire body. And I said, what's wrong? And they're like, what's wrong? Did you listen to you? And I'm like, no, I was just thinking out loud. Stop it. I didn't change this because I thought it was bad. I changed it because I thought it was wrong. No, he's not a racist. He just has a real problem with the Western culture, the white Western culture. That's not racism. That's postmodernism. You, on the other hand, media, you refuse to look at the world in anything other than your lens, what you want to see, what you believe, you and all of your friends. Everybody else, they're morons. Because all of my friends, all of my coworkers, all of my professors have told me my whole life that I am right. So you didn't want to even recognize that Barack Obama sees the world through another set of eyes, the eyes of somebody who is an anti-colonialist. That's why he gave the bust of Winston Churchill back. It's not because he hated white people or anything else. He saw the Winston Churchill that you see if you are from India or that part of the world. And Winston Churchill was a monster there. He could not see the Western version of Winston Churchill, which is just as real. And because you didn't want to explain that, or you didn't even think deeply enough about it, you just know, because everybody knows Winston Churchill, it was a killer. You didn't take the time to try to understand what that would do to the rest of the country, that weird philosophy. At least weird to somebody who grew up in America, let alone the West. You tried to normalize Jeremiah Wright and say that a man could sit there for 20 years and not be affected by that. That doesn't make any sense at all. Even Oprah Winfrey left that church and warned Barack Obama, "I'm a racist." Well, what about Oprah? Because she said the same thing. And by your denial of any of this, it only fed the beast that something else is wrong. They're hiding something else. Well, as it turns out, yes, you were hiding pictures of Louis Farrakhan. You're still hiding a speech that Barack Obama gave that everybody who was there said would have been the end of his career. But you hid the speech. It happened in L.A. Everybody knows about it. You still haven't released it. I bet it wasn't as bad as you thought it was. But maybe it wasn't as bad as I think it was, because your absence on this has made it grow into a monster. Barack Obama wanted to change our traditions, the Western ideals, the images. By the way, I'm not saying anything that Michelle Obama didn't say. Barack knows to get there, we're going to have to change our values and our traditions. There's a lot of people that didn't want to do that. But this isn't about Barack Obama. This is just the setup that you've done it before. Now, maybe you knew who Barack Obama was. By the way, everything I've just said comes without judgment. You can believe any of that. And I can understand, actually, how Barack Obama did come to believe those things. I can understand his hatred for Winston Churchill. But I don't know if he could understand my love for Winston Churchill. You see, the ignorant would say, oh, he hates Winston Churchill. He must be a bad guy. No, he grew up in Asia. And in Asia, they look at Winston Churchill from a different perspective because he was a monster there. They don't see the West. And they dismiss it just as we dismiss what he did in Asia. Both are wrong. He's both monster and savior. He's both. Now there's an elephant in the room. And you are so set that you are right. You can't see what's actually going on. So what actually happened yesterday? We'll begin there when we come back. I want to talk to you a little bit about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, because cryptocurrency, the feedback that we're getting from the audience, people are becoming more and more curious about it, and they're becoming curious on two things. Is this the end, or is this the beginning? I believe that blockchain is the future, and the different coins are a lot like the dot-com industry, and that bubble can burst. But blockchain is like the internet. It's here to stay. So we've just had our bubble burst like we did with the dot-com era, where it was crazy. Everybody's like, pets.com, I'll pay $6 billion for that. What? That wasn't real, but the internet was. Now, we're getting all kinds of questions because we did a crypto course. We're on Thursday going to do a special show. It isn't on the Blaze. It's only online at smartcryptocourse.com. Smartcryptocourse.com. You don't have to pay for it. All you have to do, you do have to register to be able to watch it. But it is Thursday night at 8 o'clock, and it's an education for the audience that it wants to understand Bitcoin, wants to understand cryptocurrency, and wants to know what's next. There is a lot of information to share, and Tika Tiwari is going to be here on Thursday to teach it. It's at beckcryptoshow.com. Register to see it now. Do not miss this. The crypto show shows that this is the conspiracy of 2018, that it's all over. BeckCryptoShow.com. BeckCryptoShow.com. It happens Thursday. Register now. All right. So, if the media were to write this story, the media would write, Glenn Beck blames media. And in some small regard, they would be right. I guess what it should be is Glenn Beck blames humans who refuse to see themselves as humans. So the press doesn't see themselves. They see themselves above humans a bit. You know, they're in the power capital. They know they're more well-educated than any of you rubes. And so they see the world the way everyone around them sees it. And they keep looking at each other. Is it just me? No, it's me too. Okay. But there's the elephant in the room now that because they are so blind, they see, but their seeing doesn't give them any understanding at all. They can see it. They can mock it. They know it's there. They think that they have addressed it or talked about it or pointed it out to people, but it does not enter their minds to use this as part of their calculus to understand what happened yesterday. One thing is the key. I'll give it to you when we come back.
We're not too far away. from July 19th. And July 19th is an important day for your financial future. Cryptocurrencies are a big market. They're a new market, and they're a very confusing market, to be frank with you. There's a lot of ups and a lot of downs. But if you go for some free investment training to BetCryptoShow.com, you get registered there for July 19th special. It's free. It's online. It's going to teach you something. And even if you don't wind up investing in cryptocurrencies, you're going to get a lot of information from this. It's something important to understand because it is coming and it is the future. Tika Tiwari will share the new facts about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies that you'll never hear in the fake news media. And he'll reveal the big event unfolding behind the scenes with cryptocurrencies that could push them to new highs. He'll share the names of three cryptocurrencies he recommends that you should buy right now. And you can even get entered into the exclusive Palm Beach Letter $2 million Bitcoin giveaway. Make sure you don't miss this opportunity. BeckCryptoShow.com. Register for this exclusive broadcast event. It's BeckCryptoShow.com.
Here's what's going to happen. Donald Trump is going to show a very strong hand in some way or another with Russia. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Because he doesn't see what he did yesterday the same way that I do or the media does or maybe you do. If you see what he did yesterday through his eyes, he didn't do anything about America. He did everything that was about the election and about him. It doesn't have anything to do with the ongoing problems with Russia. It has everything to do with the election. Now, here's why. I started with the media. You have to work with the world you live in, not the one that you want. And they want to believe that Donald Trump is this idiot, this racist, whatever it is. But he's not those things. He's not those things. Here's the main driving. I can't say this. I don't know what is making this so important to him. But he does. But somewhere in his life, he needed to feel important. He needed to feel loved or important. And it doesn't matter. I'm not saying any of this is a negative. I'm trying to explain how he became successful. We're all driven by something. In many ways, I was driven by my mom's suicide. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that. It just is. But something happened where he needed to feel important and loved. And he's, in some ways, overcompensated for it. He's driven by his ego. And we all know this to be true, because if you say nice things to him, about him, he loves you. If you say bad things about you, about him, he hates you. It's why he loves crowds, because they love him. It's why he hates the media, because they hate him. And I don't think he really understands entirely why. You want to make him into a fascist or whatever. He's not a fascist. He's not a fascist. I don't think he's a constitutionalist either. He's a businessman. He's a businessman. And he's a businessman that has built everything that he has built with his name in gold letters up at the top. Why? Because it's the best. Why is he married the women that he's married? Because they're the best. He wants everyone to know he has the best. So is he a fascist? No, he doesn't care. He doesn't. I don't think he even knows. If you asked him what a fascist was, what is the dictionary? I don't think he could tell you. If you asked him about the Constitution, how it works, what clause gives you power, he couldn't tell you. He's neither of those things. He doesn't think about those things. All men are created equal. Yes, when it comes to race, he deeply believes that. When it comes to everyone is really created equal? No, I mean, he believes in what he calls the racehorse theory. It's eugenics. I mean, he comes from some really a good bloodline. His uncle was the one from MIT that when Nikolai Tesla died, he went in and looked at all the papers at the request of the government to see which ones were dangerous and which ones weren't. It was Donald Trump's uncle. If you even understand Tesla's stuff, that's a pretty good gene pool. So he sees himself in many ways the way the media does. I have the best education. I have the best language. I have the best answers. I know. The difference between him and the media is they despise the people. I don't think Donald Trump does. I think Donald Trump actually could hang at a state fair and be kind of comfortable. Media's not comfortable. He's a salesman. He's a salesman and a businessman. Okay, so what happened? What's the one thing that the media missed? Because of Donald Trump's worldview, if you try to look at the world through his eyes, he wasn't supporting Russia. And you can disagree with this all you want. But the fact is, the way Donald Trump thinks is the way Donald Trump thinks. You're not able to predict him because you can't think like him because you don't know what really drives him. I'm the smartest. I have the most luxurious. I'm going to win. I'm going to win. I'm going to win. All right. When Donald Trump came down the elevator or the escalator to announce his presidency or his race to run, the media mocked him. I did. The media mocked him. Said this is a joke. This is just a publicity stunt. It may have been at the time. But the more people said that, the more I think he was like, oh, really? Really? It's a joke? The more people loved him and the more the media delegitimized him, the more he was set to prove them wrong. So here's what happened. Donald Trump first is called a joke by the press. Then he can't win by the press, including people like me. And then he wins. Now, what does the media do? The media does not accept the world that they live in. They can only accept the world that they want. And so they immediately go to delegitimize this guy. We immediately, before the inauguration, they're already protesting, and the media is already, with BuzzFeed, putting crap out. You know he had a golden shower in Russia? The Steele dossier? Fusion GPS? Collusion? Manafort? All of this? But what does Donald Trump hear? What Donald Trump hears is, you're saying that I'm not actually president, that I rigged the election. No, I was out busting my ass every day, and those people who are cheering for me are real, and their vote counts, and I'm the president. Now, there are four stories here that have to be separated. Four. Count them. One, the DNC servers with WikiLeaks tied in to Amwanaran, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz guy from Pakistan that was doing something shady with his family, all making $150,000 each, and then going over to Lebanon and meeting with Hamas and Hezbollah. There is something there. The Democrats are still hiding it. The press isn't looking for it. There's something huge there. And the DNC servers with WikiLeaks. That's one story. The second is the collusion in Trump Tower with Paul Manafort and then the Steele dossier. That's all one other story. So now we have two. The DNC servers and the collusion with the Steele dossier. The third story is the election fraud that actually happened, and it was thwarted, thank goodness, because they think like old Soviets. They think like it's a big state-run operation where all our elections are all happening at the local precincts. But we know that Illinois, Russians hacked in, and had they thought like Americans, they would have changed the outcome of the election in Illinois. But it failed. We know that's a fact. And the fourth is the Russian bots in social media. The guys who are in their underpants in the basement trying to, you know, influence America. Not for Donald Trump or against Donald Trump, but to create chaos. Now, those are four stories, and each one of them need to be addressed. The hacking of the DNC servers and Amwanaran, that needs to be looked at separately. Number two, collusion in Trump Tower, Paul Manafort and the Steele dossier. We know we're well down the road on that one. I haven't seen any evidence of anything. Third, the election fraud. Fourth, the Russia bots. I haven't heard any talk about the third one, election fraud. I don't know what we're doing as a country on that one. And the Russians? We're not really doing anything on that either, except a lot of talk. So what happened yesterday? Donald Trump puts all four of these as one. He looks at all four of these stories at one, and he hears, you're not really the president because the Russians rigged this election. And he immediately, fight or flight, goes to, no, wait a minute, the Russians didn't do that. What's the DNC? What are the DNC servers doing? What were they doing with the Pakistani? He said this yesterday. What were they doing with the Pakistani in the Capitol? Yes. That's not the same. That's not the same story. But the media has... The media has done to Donald Trump what it's doing to the rest of the country. They have no foresight. They have no long vision. They can't see anything except themselves and the world that they want. And so they just keep hammering the same message over and over again. This time it's the worst. And they're driving Donald Trump into days like yesterday. And they're driving the rest of America into the arms of Donald Trump. Because the average person doesn't think that Donald Trump hates America. Now that can't be said in all quarters for the last president because of his anti-colonialism. He hated colonialism. He may have been okay with America, but not with our colonial past. Nobody ever accuses Donald Trump of not loving America. He just loves himself. But I think he sees himself as quintessentially American. Yesterday was a bad screw up. But I have a feeling that Donald Trump is going to do what he always does because he is Harry Houdini. He has escaped more tight spots, thrown into a trunk, all locked up underneath the ice of the frozen river. And somehow or another, he gets out of it. I don't know how that works this time, but I wouldn't count him out. Coming up in just a second, we're going to talk to the only reporter that is actually looking into this Pakistani Amwanaran scandal with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC. this is, again, a separate story and an important story. We'll get to that at the top of the hour. And your phone calls today, 888-727-BECK. So you have to sell your home, or you want to sell your home. You want to sell your home and then buy a new one. Maybe it's a new one in your, you know, old neighborhood or town, or you have to move across the country. Well, there is an agency that that I help build that can help you. I think unlike any other company, it's realestateagentsitrust.com. Working with the right agent makes a significant difference in the outcome of buying or selling your home. We have well over 1,000 agents all over America who are just like you. They're fans of the show. They share your sensibilities, and we have taken and vetted them. They've been handpicked for their knowledge, their skill, and their track record. Thousands of families have already put realestateagentsitrust.com to the test. The results are pretty remarkable, and I invite you to see them for yourself. It is realestateagentsitrust.com. Please interview your agent. We've taken time to pick these people for you. Now you do your homework and see if you don't find them the real estate agent that you trust. Realestateagentsitrust.com. You want to buy or sell your home fast for the most amount of money, or if you're buying for the least amount of money, it is realestateagentsitrust.com. My job is twofold. My job is to try to make sense of what happened, try to give you my perspective on the events that are going on today, and then to tell you in an opinion fashion of what I think that means for our future. What does this actually mean to you? So I've told you what I thought happened yesterday, but I haven't gotten into what I think it means to you. And I also really want to take your phone calls. Coming up in just a few minutes, we have Luke Rosiak. He's going to lay out this amazing story about Pakistan that nobody is paying attention to. And Donald Trump talked about it in Russia yesterday. We have to go through that just a little bit. And then your phone call, because I really want to spend some time with you. The number is 727-BECK. I'd like to hear what you thought happened yesterday. 727-BECK.
Glenn Beck.
The president is now home from his summit with Vladimir Putin, and the nuclear level fallout is reaching epic proportions. New York Times ran an article titled Trump, Treasonous Traitor. Wow. Former CIA director John Brennan tweeted that the summit was, quote, nothing short of treasonous. Michael Moore tweeted, nah, never mind, who cares? I'll save you from the rest of the, you know, hyperbolic freakout. Well, maybe just one more. This one comes from Congressman Steve Cohen. Where are our military folks? The commander-in-chief is in the hands of the enemy. No. Now, Congressman, I don't know how you actually meant that, but it kind of sounded like you, a congressman, just called for a coup against the president. Now, then again, Peter Cohen is the guy who suggested that Peter Strzok deserved a Purple Heart, so I should have stuck with a Michael Moore quote. All right, first things first. Yesterday's press conference with the president and Putin, I believe, was a disaster. Everything from what felt like the five-minute rant on collusion to praising Putin's idea of offering up his agents for questioning if we agree to give up ours. Oh, wait a minute. I saw that Tom Cruise movie where they had to break into the FBI to get the knock list, but you're saying you'll give us your knock list if we give you ours? I don't think so. And then, worst of all, the president seemingly dissing the American intelligence agencies while siding with Putin. That's not good. Okay. I want to make this very, very clear to the American people. It's really okay if you think that Trump is good and yesterday was a disaster. It's okay. It's okay to admit that. Doesn't make you a traitor. Doesn't make you anything other than a thinking human being. If you support the president, you're a hard Republican, or whatever your affiliation, it's perfectly legitimate to call him out here because he's screwed up. And I think it's because of the way he thinks. I can understand how he saw it yesterday, but that's not the way he should have seen it. And it's actually our duty to call him out on this. I think it was John Adams who said, it's not the government's job to keep the people in line. It's the people's job to keep the government in line. Praise him when he does something right, like last week with NATO. Criticize him when he does something wrong. To act otherwise is to feed a cult of personality mentality. And that's not making America great again. But you know what? The left, you've got a cult of personality as well. Yours is just the media. I don't know what you're doing, but to sit here and act like Donald Trump hasn't done anything good or worthwhile, that's crazy talk. Or extreme leftist. But the reactions this morning are borderline insane. Treason? A coup? Are you kidding? I mean, the last time I checked, it's not treason to screw up at a press conference or to say, I don't really agree with our guys. It's not good, but it's certainly not treason. If that were the case, almost 90% of every elected official since 1791 would have spent time in Fort Leavenworth. Hyperbole is one of, if not the main reason, why nobody takes the media seriously anymore. It's why hashtag resistance. That movement, that's little more than a joke at this point. It's also probably why Democrats are losing their lead heading into midterms. Yes, that was bad yesterday. Whew, really bad. I don't know what he's going to do next. Knowing him, he's going to make it actually work out fine in the end. I don't like how close we're getting to the edge here. And it's okay to admit that. He should have something to answer for after this. I believe he owes the intelligence community a private apology, if not a public one. He needs the intelligence agencies. His follow-up tweet after the uproar began is not enough. But you know what? Can we just tone down the exaggerated freak out? We know you obviously don't realize this, but media, you're not hurting the president. In fact, I believe if Donald Trump is who I think he is, he's loving your freak out because I think he believes, and so do I, that you're basically guaranteeing his reelection.
It's Tuesday, July 17th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The only reporter that is actually doing work on the Imran Iran, I can never say this guy's name right. I always feel like it's a joke. The guy who had Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democrats up on Capitol Hill, their server, something fishy is going on there. President Obama or President Trump said that yesterday from the podium with Putin. Asked, what's happening with this one? The only guy covering it is Luke Rosiak. And Luke, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So how's it feel to be a member of the Conspiracy Theory Club?
Well, you know, a lot of times the reporters criticize Trump and they say he's talking about conspiracy theories or any number of things they wind up saying about Trump. Trump winds up being right a lot of times.
Yeah.
And the reporters wind up being embarrassed. And here, Trump talked about how a server went missing in connection with Imran Awan, and the reporters say, that's not true. Imran worked on the house, and there weren't house servers missing. Wrong. There was a secret Capitol Police memo that was urgent and marked urgent and said, Imran Awan is a serious and imminent threat to the House of Representatives. We uncovered suspicious activity involving his servers he was logging into, and we marked a particular server as evidence, the House Democratic Caucus server. And as soon as he figured out that we were onto him, that server disappeared. And now that server is missing. So that's what the Capitol Police memo says. And no reporters have bothered to obtain this. And instead, they write articles saying how, you know, Trump is wrong and these are conspiracy theories. And the reason they say it's a conspiracy theory is because the DOJ investigated this case and put out a statement. At least I won't say they investigated this case. I'll say they put out a statement claiming that they investigated the case and they didn't find any wrongdoing. And so the reporters are relying on that without going back and saying, well, wait a minute, how did this investigation begin? And that's when you get into that Capitol Police memo I mentioned, the a long investigation by the House Inspector General, and all this other stuff, which really amply demonstrates a severe cyber threat on Capitol Hill. And so they're very quick to cite Jeff Sessions when it's convenient, when they can use Sessions against Trump. But the way that any clear-headed reporter would have written this odd statement, this plea deal that the DOJ did with Imran Awan just about 2 weeks ago, they wouldn't have said, Sessions, you know, debunked all this stuff. It's conspiracy theories. They would have said Sessions is at odds with the findings of all these other investigative agencies on Capitol Hill. And those disparities have never been explained. So what we have now is, you know, a lot of people talking about Trump yesterday. They said, what were they really talking about? They're saying he didn't take a cyber hack seriously enough. Well, it turns out that a lot of these Democrats on Capitol Hill didn't take the cybersecurity threat that was raised to them by the House Inspector General and other investigative entities way back during the 2016 election. They kind of made it go away. And they can cite now that there was some DOJ investigated and found nothing. Well, it doesn't work like that. You didn't have the benefit of knowing that, even if you believe that the DOJ did a thorough investigation, which they didn't, the Democrats had this IG report clear past their desks that said, you know, he's this urgent risk. We've got data flying off the network. And they basically said, no big deal. It's probably fine. Let's not look into it. And so when you don't give them the benefit of knowing the future, which they couldn't have known, you realize that they did the same thing that they're accusing Trump of, or worse. I mean, they didn't care about a hack at all when it happened. So now, obviously, this is really just this Russia rhetoric is clearly just, you know, it's political expediency. They don't actually care about cybersecurity or anything else.
Luke, this doesn't have anything to do with the Russians, does it?
No, that's correct. My reporting has focused on the House Democratic Caucus server, and there's been some confusion there because, you know, obviously the House Democratic Caucus is similar in mission to the DNC, and it sounds similar. And basically, 2 days after WikiLeaks got hacked, Debbie Wasserman Schultz's IT guy got accused by the House Inspector General of hacking a similar group. So the timing of it and the nature of it and the people involved were all very similar. And, you know, some people wondered, could he have been involved in WikiLeaks as well? My reporting is focused on what the evidence strongly, strongly supports, which is that there was this hack on Capitol Hill. And in my mind, that's a serious thing. After all, the DNC is merely a fundraising group. What we're talking about is government servers. Mm-hmm. And what this instance revealed is sort of a stunning hypocrisy where the Democrats didn't want. Basically, what I think happened is it would have been an inconvenient narrative. It really would have complicated the narrative for them, for this guy to be busted and arrested 2 days after the DNC thing happened. And then you've got this, you know, you would have had media stories about Debbie Wasserman Schultz's Pakistani IT guy being arrested for hacking the House Democratic Caucus server. No one's going to keep track of that and how it's different than the Russians and the DNC. So in my mind, what happened here is the Democrats were willing to jeopardize national security to secure this Russian narrative. So it's all about the perception and the way that this separate hack would have complicated that narrative. And in the end of the day, Democrats chose the narrative rather than, you know, security.
So can you for anybody who doesn't know about this case, can you in 3 minutes kind of summarize who this guy is, what he did with his family, you know, all of that stuff?
Sure. So he started working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz a decade ago, and pretty soon he had his entire family on the payroll, and they were all making as much as congressmen in Capitol Hill. Very unusual for IT guys. The whole thing was just stank. And these guys.
Wait, hang on just a second. Hang on just a second. They were making over $150,000. The average IT person on the Hill makes about $50,000, right?
Correct.
And nobody in this family had any experience in IT.
Imran Awan did, but the relatives he were putting on, they didn't even go to college. One of the guys worked at McDonald's. And so you've got members like Ted Lieu, who's a very outspoken liberal on these Russia and cybersecurity issues. They were putting these people who had criminal records, no cybersecurity training. You know, they had massive red flags in their backgrounds, like $1 million in debts, and they would lie about it on their financial disclosures. And they, you know, these Democrats exempted them from background checks. And the whole thing, it just was astonishingly reckless and negligent. And the Democrats couldn't have been worse on cybersecurity. And this has been going on from a decade ago until, you know, through the 2016 election and into 2017. And so the IG found that they were funneling data off the network. They were logging into servers of places they had no business being. Some of the members fired them over the last couple of years, and they wound up logging into their servers anyway. Why would they do that? It's just really scary stuff. And so these guys they found out about this before the election, but they just kind of punted until after, which is that, you know, what really concerns me is placing politics over security. And so they were kind of vague about what happened after the election, right after Trump's inauguration. So we're looking into something. It might be theft. I don't know what it is. It's very vague. So I started looking into these guys. This guy travels in Pakistan. First of all, he spends several months out of every year in Pakistan. He logs into Congressional Service from Pakistan. He's got an entourage of armed guards over in Pakistan that escort him, raising the question of how he has that kind of, why is he being protected by the Pakistani government? People in Pakistan say that he constantly brags about the power he has, the immense political influence. You know, basically he's really acts like he has all this power stemming from his congressional job. And, you know, basically a lot, he's been in trouble his whole life. He's been accused of extortion-like behavior, blackmail-type things. And that's what I'm really concerned about, because he had access to all the emails and files of 1 in 5 House Democrats. So he finds out that the Capitol Police are onto him, and he flees the country and he gets busted. He arrested at the airport with $9,000 in cash. Before that, he had wired over $300,000 in Pakistan. And, you know, basically they only charged him with wiring the money over. But if you look at the case in totality, you can see that he clearly knew that he was caught doing something so bad that he fled the country and was frantically liquidating all of his possessions. So 2 years go by, I exposed all this really serious stuff, and you can see the documents. This guy had multiple wives under Sharia law in Virginia, and both of them were saying they were being like held in captivity by him, and death threats were controlling. His own stepmom said that he was wiretapping her, surveilling her with high-tech equipment and extorting her. Like, my God, this is the exact kind of behavior that you would be afraid of in an IT guy in Congress who's been found funneling data off the House network. And you look into his background, it can't be a coincidence. I mean, this guy has the worst background you've ever seen in your life. And so Jeff Sessions, you know, managed to kind of string this investigation along without doing anything for 2 years, even as it got weirder and weirder. And at one point, Imran was banned from Congress. He came in at midnight into the House office building, took Debbie Wasserman Schultz's laptop, and left it in a phone booth. And on top of it, he put a little note that said attorney-client privilege. And so the Capitol Police seized the laptop because they realized that it was tied to him and he's a criminal suspect. And so Jeff Sessions has this laptop that Wasserman Schultz threatens the Capitol Police to give back. She desperately doesn't want it seen. And so Jeff Sessions, basically, they give all the evidence over to the defense improperly, and they say it's a mistake, and they do all these kind of things that indicate that they're just clearly trying to make this go away, working with the defense attorney, who is, incidentally, a Hillary Clinton aide. And getting back to that laptop and that note that says attorney-client privilege, well, Jeff Sessions' prosecutors go, well, he put a note, we can't look at it, which kind of gets to the heart of the matter, this deep state, just the ludicrous nature of what we've seen under the DOJ and how it's really forming a pattern. I mean, the idea that when you have a Democratic staffer, you can put a post-it note and say attorney-client privilege and they won't look at it, it's the most absurd thing you've ever heard. I mean, could you put a post-it note on a gun after you shot someone and say attorney-client privilege and then they wouldn't be able to use it? So there are so many signs. At this point, it's become, to me, sort of a deep state DOJ issue, right in line with what we've seen with Peter Stroke, where the DOJ they put out a statement clearing him, and the media has used that to make the whole thing go away. But the big issue here is, how can they justify this investigation? Because it is completely at odds with documents. many, many documents that show crimes, including as things as simple as their house financial disclosures, hiding all this money that they were hiding away in different ways, including a car dealership that took $100,000 from an Iraqi government minister.
Luke, I can't tell you how grateful I am that you are on the job on this. Keep nosing around and finding what's going on. I just wanted to have you on today to, A, thank you for your work, and also to let the American people know this is what the president was talking about last night. He is conflating a whole bunch of different stories into one, but this is a separate story and really important. What was happening with the Democratic caucus in the Capitol? Why, how did this guy get hired? How did his family get hired? What were they stealing? What do they know? What's happening? All right, our sponsor this half hour is Simply Safe. I have to talk to you a little bit about just the best alarm company and alarm service that you can buy. Now, Simply Safe is good for your business. It's good for your house. Because they take the time to really do it right. It's all wireless. You own it. You know, nobody's going to come in with a little blue booties and spend the day wiring your house. Simply Safe knows that you're smart enough to count the windows and the doors, and you know where the cameras should go, and they'll help you through that. But you should own it. That way you're not paying this stupid monthly fee of like $50. You own it. The price is unbelievable. Check it out and you'll see how fast you're going to start making money if you have a security system now. And the monthly fee, if you want somebody to watch 24/7, is $15 a month. That will, you know, contact the police and the fire and, you know, do all the usual stuff. It's Simply Safe. Go to simplysafebeck.com right now. You're going to get 10% off your home security system. The best one made, simplysafebeck.com, simplysafebeck.com. Did anybody remember the tone of the media when Barack Obama went to Cuba? Do you remember the tone of the media when Barack Obama shook hands with... what's his name from Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, and took the book? Remember how they said this was just a great leap forward and this is a majestic day and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Hey, media. The way you feel right now, it's the way we felt under Obama when he went to Cuba.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
You know, relatives are great for a lot of things. Wonderful conversations around the table, around the holidays. They always go super well. You can always trust them with your kids. I mean, yeah, sure, they might lose track of them from time to time, but I'm sure that'll work out. And you never get any arguments with them because you always share the exact same values. Maybe I'm living in a dream world here. A lot of people, they'll go down this dream world when they pick some random relative with a little bit of real estate experience to be their real estate agent because they, at least I know them. Maybe you should go a different way. Maybe you should go find a place that has already gone through all the things that are important when it comes to real estate agents. We're talking about, marketing plans, experience, character, results, and honestly, values. Shared values are important. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is a place you can go. People that listen to this show that are real estate agents can help walk you through this process. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com, RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Tahir, welcome to the Glenn Beck Program at 888-727-BECK.
Hey, Glenn, it's so good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I've been listening to you for 10 years, and I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make the point that you need to pay more attention to what Trump's doing than what he says, because obviously a lot of times he doesn't know what to say. But his actions as far as towards Russia is concerned, he hasn't removed sanctions. He isn't sending our diplomats back over there. He's calling him out with the pipeline, you know, in mm-hmm. Germany. Mm-hmm. He's still providing weapons, you know, to Ukraine. I mean, all of these things he's still doing, and he hasn't shown any signs of taking any of that back. So you have to say to yourself, okay, maybe he doesn't always say the right thing, and maybe he was just trying to smooth things over because we haven't had a decent, you know, speaking relationship with them. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, he's still having all of these policies in place. He hasn't changed his policy, and I think that's a good thing. Even though, you know, I didn't vote for him, I'm kind of, you know, I feel like you do about his presidency. I recognize him for the good, and I recognize him for the bad.
Well, Tahir, I generally agree with you. He hasn't. His policies are very anti-Putin and anti-Russia, and he's taken a strong stand on those things. The only problem that I think I would disagree with you with is that, you know, you have to listen to his, you know, don't listen to his words, watch what he does. That is true with this president. However, this is complicated because when you're in a foreign country, you are the president of the United States, and the world is going to judge you on your words. And, you know, those words yesterday are a little hard to take back.
On a national stage to, you know, basically call out our FBI like that. I totally agree with you on that. Absolutely.
Okay, great. Tahir, thank you so much. Let me go to Dave. Dave in Florida. Hello, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Glenn? I've been a fan of yours for many, many years.
Thank you.
I appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Listen, you know, if we go back and look at President Trump's work as a whole, okay, over the years, the man is a master businessman. He is a master salesperson. And when you're in a business relationship or you're entering into a business relationship with another opponent, especially one that you dislike or you feel like is not going to be dealing with you on the up and up, you put your schmooze on that person and you put your best foot forward. You go out of your way to make them like the deal, like you, so you can get accomplished what you need to do. And I think that's what Trump did yesterday. He hasn't done anything to hurt us. His project is Make America Great Again. And I think he has an agenda that nobody knows about except for maybe his inner circle. And he's going to accomplish what he needs to accomplish to get there.
Dave, you could be right. You could be right. We'll leave it at that. Thanks for your phone call, Dave. I've seen this president do things and you'd be like, what are you doing? And he is a master businessman. However, Vladimir Putin is, you know, former KGB. He's doing the same thing. He was flattering the president as well. They both are the same. They're the same kind of people. Donald Trump's not a killer, but, you know, Putin is. But they understand, they speak each other's language. I think that's why Trump gets along with him or likes him, because he gets things done and is the guy who's calling the shots. In the business world, that's fine. As a president of a country, that's not fine. That usually makes you into the guy that Vladimir Putin is. But they were both flattering each other. Let's go to Elaine in Ohio. Hello, Elaine.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to respectfully disagree with your assessment of the Russian summit. I think, one, it was Trump's opportunity on the world stage to let everybody know the situation in America, because it doesn't get out. And also, the thing about Putin, what they have in common, and Trump will give everybody the benefit of the doubt, especially someone that can benefit our country, and disarmament is a big deal for everybody, even those who are pretending it's not anymore. Who've been on that
bandwagon
for a long time.
It is.
And the one thing about Putin, too, everybody has the opportunity to grow and learn. This man's trying to spread Orthodox Christianity amongst his entire country.
Oh, my.
I hope he does it the right way. I hope that he respects people's individual freedom.
No, he doesn't.
Well, I don't know the man.
Well, I don't know the man either, but I know the man's actions. Let's judge a man by his actions. He is not trying to spread Orthodox Christianity. He is using that as control the same way that Hitler did. It's called the fourth political theory. Look it up. Do your homework before you start wanting to praise Vladimir Putin and Orthodox Christianity. He has, through agencies in Russia, has poured money into our churches here. He is a liar. He is a killer. And do not confuse him with anything other. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Dino Hello, Dino.
Hey, Glenn, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Love you.
Thank you.
Great, great. Trying to weather this Texas heat. Anyway,
oh my gosh, is it just, it's like, I mean, hell cannot be this hot. It cannot be this hot in hell.
I just moved here from Georgia.
Oh.
It's a whole different kind of heat.
Oh my gosh, it is the fires of hell.
Anyway, Trump looked really exhausted for the first time. I thought he was really, really tired. He had been to Brussels, he had been to England, he had been to Scotland, then Helsinki. And I think it was, A, he was overtired, and B, two questions he gets, and they're both about Russian meddling, not about nuclear, not about cooperation with Korea, not about, you know, anything other than meddling. I think he's so frustrated and irritated with the press that he kind of lost it a little bit, you know, but I love the guy. I mean, he's a straight shooter. He says what's on his mind. Wasn't his best performance, but I think a lot of it just had to do with being tired.
Okay, Dino, thanks so much for your phone call, and enjoy the heat. Enjoy the heat. It only lasts like this until about November. Oh, my God. I disagree with the direction of the sentiment here. That Donald Trump was going over to talk about nukes and everything else. I really don't think so. I think his agenda was to look pooty-poot in the eyes and say, did you rig this election for me? Because that's what they're saying. And I just don't think that, I mean, I think the other things were important, but remember, it was last week that everybody was like, well, why is he even going there? There's no agenda. There's no reason. So don't buy into the huge agenda thing. Why did he go over? He was in the area. He wanted to meet with Putin. He wanted to put to rest this collusion thing. He believes he can do that. He believes that Putin did. I think in Donald Trump's mind, he has conflated all of the Russia talk into a story that is solely about him not being the legitimate president of the United States. That's the way he sees what the press is doing. He's not a legitimate president of the United States. And I think that, you know, if you're hit as hard as Donald Trump is hit on everything you do, name the thing that the press has said has been good. Name it. I can't. I can't think of anything. Well, yesterday, the New York Times did come out with an editorial saying that Donald Trump at NATO did get everything that Obama was trying to get. So I'll take that as one. I mean, you know, they've said nice things about his speeches or State of the Union, but then they don't, that's not, tell me something. Look at the way they treated Israel. Look at the way we've moved our embassy to the capital of Israel. And everyone knows it is Jerusalem. It's not Tel Aviv. The seat of the government is in Jerusalem. This was the worst thing of all time. Again, meanwhile, look at the press coverage of our president going sitting next to a Castro. A Castro. That was an abomination. That was the worst. And the pageantry behind that. Oh, how magnificent it was that the president would watch a baseball game with Fidel's brother. No, that's not good. They just see the world in a totally different way. And if we want to be honest, nobody in the White House knew that the president was going to come out the way he did yesterday. That was a surprise to all of them. I mean, John Bolton said last year, this is an act of war. And what the Russians did, I believe, is an act of war. But, you know, we're looking the other way because we don't want to go to war. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about it. And we're not. The media is only talking about it to delegitimize Donald Trump. And that's why he went over. That's why he said the things that he did yesterday. And maybe he didn't plan on saying those things because he was hoping for different questions from the press. But why would they ever give him different questions? He should know better than to expect good questions from the press about how was it, what was the most beautiful thing about your relationship with Vladimir Putin in the life. I mean, remember the questions that Barack Obama used to get? What's the most enchanting thing about being president? I saw somebody say, oh my gosh, look at the president's just going to Sean Hannity. Yeah, do you remember the girl who, what was it? She took a bath in Fruit Loops or something. She was this big internet blogger and the president sat down with her. Remember she had like the, you know, all the lipstick. She looked kind of like Miranda. I mean, what? Really? The president was going to internet bloggers that sat in a bathtub with Cheerios or Fruit Loops. Please get off your high horse. 888-727-BECK. Your phone call is coming up next. Ironically, as people improve their cybersecurity on their computers, thieves are turning back and stealing stuff from your mailbox. Mail phishing, where they take a sticky rat trap and they tie it to strings and they fish into the mailbox. And that rat trap springs and grabs a bunch of mail and they pull it out. Believe it or not, it's working for them. They've been snagging gift cards and documents with personal information like social security numbers. There are so many threats in today's connected world, and it takes one weak link for criminals to get in. The good thing is that new LifeLock identity theft protection is here, and it's added the power of Norton Security to help protect you against the threats to your identity and your devices that you can't easily see or fix on your own. If you have a problem, their agents are going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can stop all cyber threats, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with the new Norton Security is able to uncover the threats you might otherwise miss. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use the promo code BECK for an extra 10% off your first year. That's promo code BECK. Get an extra 10% off at LifeLock.com. All right. Let me go to Tom in Delaware. Hello, Tom. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, Glenn. Love your show, man.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm a military guy. Got three sons, great American warriors serving in the military.
Thank you.
That's all I want to say. I don't want to give any details, but here it is. Putin is going to give Trump all the intel he needs to indict Hillary and the Democrats because our intel services won't. Okay, and you can tell by their smirks. They almost mentioned it yesterday. That's what the whole idea of where's the server, and we're all going to help each other investigate. We know they have it, right? The Russians have all the intel because everybody told us they broke in and got it.
Okay, but they're not admitting that they did that with WikiLeaks or have it from WikiLeaks.
I don't know about WikiLeaks.
Well, they're the ones who did the hack, or at least released all the information from the hack. And
if I know the way Donald Trump works, that's what the four-hour conversation was about. I don't think they talked about nuclear stuff. I don't think they talked about maybe a little bit about Syria. And I think that only two things that Trump and Putin have in common, they're both men of action, and men of action despise paper shufflers. And all these people on the other side are all paper shufflers. They're not people of action.
All right. Thanks so much, Tom. I don't think it's healthy for the president of the United States to be in league with Putin. I don't think he is, and that's why I reject your standard there. I do believe that There is something to this Amwaneron issue with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC caucus on Capitol Hill with that missing server. And I do think that they did talk about that. And I do think that Putin may want to tell, you know, something. When Donald Trump said he's going to come out with something here, it may be involving something like that. But that is just a smokescreen to cover what Russia is doing as well, even if that all turns out to be true. But I don't believe they're in league with each other.
Glenn Beck.
Well, the revolutions of the past have always been started by youth, and the left is desperate for young blood, more fresh blood, and they're turning on their own. As reported by the Los Angeles Times, Senator Dianne Feinstein is more often considered a radical, you know, but now not so much, not so much. She's not too radical. For California, you can't become too radical. That's why California has moved to the left, and they endorsed Kevin DeLeon. Now, the Democratic Central Committee, which sounds awful Soviet, said they wanted to send a message. I just think we need a younger, progressive person there. The Democratic Party in California has moved to the left, and he personifies those values. Feinstein and DeLeon are going to face each other in November because California has an open primary system in which the top two finishers face each other regardless of the party. So the left is going hard left. And when Dianne Feinstein is not left enough for you, where are the press reports of how the extremists are taking over the party? A trend is starting to spread. A growing number of Trump's base are former Democrats. In fact, 21% of the people who voted for Donald Trump have voted for Barack Obama. 15% of them voted two times for Barack Obama. So in response, Democrats are now prowling for a new base, a young base that has never voted before. Now, I don't know how this is going to work out. Many have predicted that the next generation of voters are going to be the most conservative generation since pre-World War II. I guess they've just watched as their older siblings or parents have returned from college with pink hair, atheism, exorbitant debt that they'll never be able to pay, infinite genders, and decided that maybe personal responsibility, some sort of a moral compass, and perhaps hard work is preferable to postmodernism.
It's Tuesday, July 17th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
A guy who might know the answer of what's coming next is Ian Bremmer. He is a political scientist. He is the author of Us Versus Them, The Failure of Globalism. And last week wrote an article for Time magazine, Trump and Putin will call their summit a success, but don't expect U.S.-Russia relations to improve. Welcome to the program. Ian, how are you?
Glenn, good to be back with you.
So tell me, how did things go yesterday, in your opinion?
Well, look, obviously this was not one of Trump's better moments. And I think even if you were watching only Fox News yesterday,
yes,
you saw that the coverage was on balance negative. Why do you not have your advisors in there? You know, why are you making equivalents between the FBI and the KGB or the FSB, the successor to the KGB? I mean, he clearly made Putin look good, and he did not come across as the president of the United States. But if you ask what actually came out of the meeting in terms of substance, Trump did not offer recognition of Crimea as part of Russia, certainly did not promise reduction of sanctions, nor would he be able to implement such, I think, if he did promise them, didn't say that the U.S. was going to suspend military exercises in the Baltics or withdraw any troops in Poland, isn't reducing American defense spending, which is going up, isn't talking about taking troops out of Syria. In other words, all of the things that have led to a U.S.-Russia relationship that's pretty hard line and certainly in its worst position as it's been in decades, I don't expect that in any way to change, despite the fact that Trump individually clearly would like it to.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, the people around Donald Trump know exactly who Vladimir Putin is, and his policies have reflected that. I really think, Ian, that this whole thing was him going over to stand with Putin, who would say, no, we didn't fix the election so Donald Trump would win. Because I don't think Donald Trump sees the difference between the social media hackers and the DNC hackers and all of the other things that are going on with Russia. He sees all of it as one big ball that says you're not a legitimate president. Would you agree with that or not?
I am sure that's true. I think anything that implies that his electoral win was less than the biggest, most extraordinary
yes.
Win that we've ever seen is not acceptable.
Right.
And there's also the question. I mean, he clearly is aware that the Russians were involved in hacks against the DNC and against the elections, and not just in terms of cyber attacks, but also disinformation, mm-hmm. lots of Russians pretending to be American citizens, voters, and mm-hmm. influencing people. And whether or not it flipped the election, I certainly have no view, and I'm even somewhat skeptical, but it clearly matters, right? In the same way that Trump spending money matters, and all these things we do matter for elections. And you have to wonder, with Putin saying, yeah, I wanted Trump, I didn't want Hillary, he said it yesterday, if Trump also isn't going over individually to see Putin and get any sense of, hey, what are your plans for the midterms? What are your plans for 2020? Mm-hmm. I mean, whether or not he's going to say that, he's certainly thinking about it.
So was this the disaster that the press said, or some at Fox that said this was the greatest thing ever? What was this? How is this going to be remembered by people, not by history, because I don't, you know, history is written by sometimes people I don't necessarily think get it. How is this going to be remembered, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that while the it was a real win for the left, right, in the sense that they've been talking all this time about how Trump is in Putin's pocket, mm-hmm. and he goes over there and he acts in an enormously embarrassing way that kind of shows that he's really personally deferential to Trump in a way that none of his advisors agree with.
Yes.
So, I mean, it makes it. So I think that if you are in the position of being a professional Trump basher, if that's what you do, yesterday was an awesome day for you.
Right.
But if you're actually trying to look at the broad sweep of where the world is going and saying what really matters, I would certainly argue the NATO summit's a lot more important than the Helsinki summit. I think that Trump's decision to pull out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, his G7 performance, in general, the fact that American alliances and multilateral institutions with the advanced industrial democracies are getting so much weaker. That was true before Trump became president, but Trump actively wants to break the EU. I mean, there are many presidents historically that have thought maybe we don't want a really strong Europe. Maybe we want a Europe that's a little divided, an EU that's a little weaker so we can have more sway. But there's never been an American president that wants the EU to go away. And Trump does. Trump actually believes that he would be better off if the EU were to break. And I think that is really, really wrong and bad for the United States.
So hang on here for just a second. You've been dubbed the rising guru in the field of political risk by The Economist. What the hell does that even mean?
I guess it means that a very wonky British magazine thinks I'm very cool.
Right. But in political risk, that means you can see what they think that you're pretty good at seeing what the risks are and how things might shake out. Right.
Understanding how politics affects the markets all over the world.
Okay.
For example, the relationship between those things. Sure.
All right. So let's go back to the EU now. Yep. You just said, I think that would be really bad for us, and it could be very bad for us. But let's talk about it from the people in the EU, far as their sovereignty. I think there is this undercurrent of nobody trusts the media, nobody trusts their government. They feel that their government is out of step and erasing their identities, which is really dangerous because that leads to, for instance, this identitarian movement overseas, which quickly spirals into Nazism or extremism. But how do you solve this to where you can restore the countries and say it's okay to be France, it's okay to be Italy? We're just going to be together, but you can be Italy. You can be England. Is there a way to accomplish this, or is it really just jam it down the throat and hope that it works, or, you know, riots in the street trying to break it up?
Well, you know, Glenn, I'm very sympathetic to that question because the fact is that the momentum right now is with Trump-type solutions, and
right.
not just in the United States, but in Europe.
Right.
Even in Canada, right, with the election of Doug Ford in Ontario a few weeks ago. You know, this is, you've got a whole bunch of people that feel like they have been forgotten, and the easiest way to rally them is to say, no, I'm going to look after you, and we're all Italians.
Mm-hmm.
And no more of these outside Libyans coming in. I'm going to close all the ports. I'm going to look after you, and we're all Germans.
Mm-hmm.
And no more Syrians, no more Muslims coming in. And Brussels, open borders, free trade, don't trust any of those people. I mean, the fact is that when Trump was over in the UK meeting with Theresa May and embarrassing the hell out of a sitting prime minister, fact is that Trump is more popular in the United States than May is in the UK. I'm not saying that that justifies it, but it is a fact. And one has to ask how that is true. Why that is true? Because if you're not going to address the underlying problems, as much as I would like to see the EU stay in place, I can't sit here and pretend that it's going to get stronger.
Right.
It's only getting weaker. It's only getting weaker before Trump jumps up on it, up and down, tries to see
right.
if he can shake some more pieces.
It will collapse on its own weight if they don't address the underlying problems. And they just keep crying racism, when that may play a role for here and there. But for the vast majority, I don't think it is racism. I think it's multiculturalism, which is vastly different. And nobody is addressing the people's feelings, which only leads to trouble.
You're not addressing a lot of things. You're not addressing the fact that working classes in the United States and Europe have not seen their opportunities grow. In fact, they've seen
yes.
them deteriorate while the top 1 and 10% are doing better. You're not seeing a response to people who feel like the country and their communities don't look like them, don't feel like them anymore. When they've been forgotten, say, wait a second, you're going to bring...
Oh, geez, so we'd lose... Ian... This is like the second time at this time we've. Oh, there you are. Okay, we missed the last 20 seconds.
Oh, so the idea that you have people responding to new folks coming in that don't look like them, don't act like them, but they're going to respond to whether or not some of that's racism, and I'm sure some of it is, but nonetheless, if you haven't been taking care of the people that are already in your country, you can understand why those people would say, and you're going to let new people in?
Right.
I mean, correct. Turkish workers, educated with jobs in Germany, are some of the most virulently anti-new immigration because they recognize that those new people that don't have the education and aren't going to perform as well in the economy, are seen to be expensive, potentially is going to poison the well by Germans against the Turks. And they don't want to see that. And then, of course, you have security issues where the poor people in these countries fighting as allies with the United States, and Trump doesn't say anything about their sacrifices in Afghanistan or Iraq or other countries. But the fact is that just like in the U.S., it's the enlisted men and women. Yes. It's the people, you know, not the most educated that are fighting in these wars that have been failed wars and very expensive. If you think it feels bad in the United States, imagine how it feels for allies of the United States that are now, pardon my French, being pissed on by the American president for not doing enough for NATO. If you were a member of one of those families or one of the people serving in those countries themselves, you have become viscerally opposed to these established governments as a consequence of that.
So does he help? Do the people over in Europe at all or in England, because he is speaking for Brexit, does he appeal but at the same time repel? How do they perceive him?
There's a small group. I mean, certainly Nigel Farage, who had been, you know, sort of the tip of the spear for Brexit, and now I think a Fox News commentator. But in addition to that, ran the UK Independence Party. He and many of his supporters think that Trump is useful and agree and align with this idea of draining the swamp. Even if Trump's not actually doing that, they like the message. They like the anti-political correctness that absolutely resonates, just as it does with the alt-right in the U.S., that resonates with a lot of people, a lot of young people, too, across Europe. But let's be clear. Trump's biggest message that the Europeans are hearing, and the Brits themselves as well, is America first. And that's why, other than the Queen, you had a couple of the major royals, right, Prince Charles, Prince William, didn't even show up. That's an astonishing thing for a visiting American president, and it's because America First feels so bad, so contradictory to the special relationship that pretty much, I mean, so many of the things that Trump has done outside the United States are disagreed with by every major American ally, whether it's leaving the Paris Climate Accord or leaving the Trans-Pacific Partnership, leaving UNESCO, the moving the U.S. Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, unilaterally pulling out of the Iranian deal. Literally every American ally in Europe opposes those moves. And that's quite something. And that's a pretty broad feeling across European populations as well.
Ian Bremmer, thank you so much for being on. Author of Us Versus Them, The Failure of Globalism. Thanks, Ian. We'll talk again.
Ben Osprey.
Kind of interesting because he was reading that list and I was like, yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I like that too. I guess I would be very unpopular with the governments of Europe as well. Perhaps you would be too. Let me tell you about Goldline. Goldline has a brand new product that has been printed by the Royal Canadian Mint. Now, this is another harebrained idea that came from me because, you know, I study history and I've studied revolutions and I've studied economic collapses. And, you know, it always ends with somebody, you know, picking diamonds out of poop to get out of the country. So what do you do if, I mean, if everybody controls everything that you have, or if the dollar collapsed, what do you do? So we've asked the Royal Canadian Mint to make what they have named now the Maple Flex Bar. And it is a bar of silver that is 19 individual bars that make up 2 ounces of silver. And it makes you, it makes it possible for you to just keep breaking pieces of this off. And they look like square coins, Canadian coins, and they're all marked, you know, for exactly the percent of silver and the weight of each. There are 10 120th ounce bars. There are 5 1/10 ounce bars, 4 1/4 ounce bars, and it's about the size of a credit card. Each bar legal tendered, guaranteed for their weight and purity by the Royal Canadian Mint. They are only available at Goldline. Call or visit for more information at goldline.com or pick up the phone and call them at 866-GOLDLINE. That's goldline.com. Call them now, goldline.com or 866-GOLDLINE.
Glenn Beck.
In Hawaii, they're dealing with a boat, a tourist boat that took people out for a lava cruise. And a giant, what they're calling a lava bomb, a giant lava rock, came out of the mountain and flew across the water and hit the boat. Now, everybody is alive, thank goodness. I think there's like 20 injured, but hey, mainlanders, lava, hot, hot, watch it on TV. Stay away from the lava. Hot.
This is really going to surprise you, but the media does a really terrible job at a lot of things. And one of the things they do a terrible job at is covering cryptocurrencies. They will just take, someone like Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan, who came out and called Bitcoin a fraud, and then they don't really cover the fact that J.P. Morgan wound up emerging as one of the most active buyers on behalf of their clients of a fund that tracks the Bitcoin price. George Soros did the same type of thing. You got to have the full picture. Experts are all over the map when it comes to cryptocurrencies. You need to know the facts. We're going to explore this in a live, free online broadcast that Glenn is going to personally host on July 19th. Go to BeckCryptoShow.com and register for the free special event. You're going to discover the new case for Bitcoin, 3 names of cryptocurrencies that Tika Tiwari recommends that you should buy now. It's a really important list. And exclusively, you'll get access to the $2 million Bitcoin giveaway. Go to BeckCryptoShow.com and register. It's BeckCryptoShow.com, BeckCryptoShow.com.
I'll take your phone call at 888-727-BECK. We also have a couple of other things I'd like to get to today. The Illinois new gun bill, the new legislation, it looks like it's going through and going to be signed. The new South African study out that says fathers in the home should not be presented as normal. Okay. Also, it's the week of Madonna's 60th birthday, which I don't think we can let this week pass without doing something appropriate for Madonna. How about this one? Sculpture of the Virgin Mary that appeared to be crying at the Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church in Hobbs, New Mexico, is being investigated after it was determined that her ears were her tears were olive oil. Apparently, a sculpture of Virgin Mary that appeared to be crying at a church in New Mexico was crying olive oil. Scented olive oil. Witnesses claim that it smelled of roses. Something similar to the oil I bless and consecrate each year that we use for baptism, for confirmations, and for the ordination of priests. This is what the bishop of the archdiocese said. Some people said that it smelled like roses, and the archbishop says, well, that oil does kind of. So we don't know if she's, I don't know, they're calling this, some people are saying this is a fraud, somebody put olive oil there, and some people think this is a miracle, but, you know, when I weep tears of butter, the world doesn't make a big story out of it. It's not a big deal. Also, the San Francisco mayor says, I've seen more feces than I've ever seen. And when you're talking about your own city and you're the mayor, that's got to be a proud moment. We'll get into that on tomorrow's broadcast. Right now, let me go to Joe in Virginia. Hello, hey, Joe.
Hi, Glenn. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Just found you about 2 years ago, and I really enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
I listened to you for the last couple of hours, and I'm getting real confused. Maybe you could help me out.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to me, from what I've read, everything that they use for the indictment of the these Russian oligarchs or whoever they are over in Russia came from DNC sources. For instance, the server that they tried to get from the DNC wouldn't give it to them. They finally gave it to a third party hired by the DNC. That information was given to the FBI. And that, is that what they used to indict these guys? I mean, is this, this whole thing that's going on just a perpetuation of the Trump's a bad guy and a Russian spy?
I will tell you.
Go ahead.
No. I will tell you that I don't have that answer, and I should have that answer for you. I will have that answer for you tomorrow, or we are doing something tonight on this, and I will make sure that we look that up and add that to it, what went into this indictment. I find it hard to believe that it would only be on the word of the DNC or a DNC operative, but then again, we've seen stranger things. So
6 months, I would have 6 months ago, I would have never believed that. But everything that's going on now and all the shenanigans, I mean, going back to the Clinton server, Bitwash before they give it to the you know, nobody gets trouble. I mean, it's just everything just smells fishy. You know, it's like my grandmother used to say, she opens a package, it smells fishy, throw it away. I just am really confused, yet it's hard to get true information.
So this is what the American people and the media, if they cared, should be saying right now. Sunlight is always the best disinfectant. Sunlight. And what's happening is they're not following leads. They're, you know, for instance, the stuff with Peter Strzok. I mean, you had all of the Hillary Clinton emails. You had all of them. Even the missing 30,000, you had all of them and you didn't do anything about it. You sat on it for months. How is that possible? If we want credibility and we want to be able to believe our intelligence sources, then we need to start acting. Those intelligence agencies need to start acting like they deserve our trust. Right now, I don't know what to believe is true. I'm with you. A couple of years ago, I wouldn't have been saying the things that I say about the FBI today. I hope I can trust the average FBI agent, but I don't know what happens at the higher end in Washington. I have no idea.
Yeah. You talked about Peter Strzok. I mean, he got up there. It was obvious that he was lying through his teeth to anybody with half a brain. And the only thing you saw from the DNC was a stupid go around to get time and divert the attention to some other subject.
You know,
What am I supposed to think of that?
It's amazing, Joe, how different we see the world now. I was talking to another friend who's really intelligent. He said exactly the same thing that you said, except in reverse. Glenn, please. It was so clear. This guy was telling the truth, that he's honorable, and the Republicans did nothing but blah, blah, blah. I didn't trust him at all. Something in my gut, and I think it was his arrogance, said, don't trust him. However, I thought both sides looked bad. I thought both sides, Louis Gohmert, who's a friend of mine, he went too far. What are you doing, Louis? Stop it. You know, both sides went too far on that one. But I can understand at least the Republican point of view on this, on saying, look, something is fishy here. Something is really not right. And I'm sorry, but if you have the point of view to where you are this strong against somebody who is running for president, you should recuse yourself. If you really want to be honorable, you would say, you know what, I think this could even just come back. I know I can keep it separate, but I am just not a fan. And I'd like to see him stopped. And I think we need somebody who, you know, either doesn't care you know, at least doesn't have it out for him. Because I think it will look bad on the FBI. If Peter Strzok was a hero, that's what he would have done. But he didn't. And you know, I don't trust him. But I don't know where to go to get that trust, because no one in Washington is acting trustworthy. No one in the media is acting trustworthy. I don't trust it. Let me ask you this, Joe. Do you trust the Republicans much more than you do the Democrats?
No, I'm an independent. I voted both Republican and Democrat. Of course, with everything that went on, and especially after Benghazi, there was no way I was going to vote for Hillary.
Correct.
And I very begrudgingly voted for Trump, mainly for picks on the
Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. But I try my damnedest to be open-minded. I mean, I listen to Fox News in the morning, then I listen to the Today Show, and then I used to put the MSNBC on. I can't stand listening to them anymore.
Yeah.
So it's like, what the hell are you excuse my language. What do you do?
Yeah. Well, you just keep searching for the truth, and you don't corner yourself with one point of view. I think it's really important. Last night, I watched Fox and I watched CNN. And I think it's really, really important. I mean, if you didn't watch Fox last night, you missed a piece of what I thought was fantastic journalism. And that's Chris Wallace. Chris Wallace asked for some hard answers from Putin. Let me play Wallace Putin on opponent's murders, please. You want to talk
why
about bravery.
Why is it that so many of the people that oppose Vladimir Putin end up dead or close to it?
Well, first of all of us have plenty of political rivals. I'm pretty sure President Trump has plenty of political rivals.
But they don't end up dead.
Not always. Well, haven't presidents been killed in the United States? Have you forgotten about it? Well, has Kennedy been killed in Russia or in the United States? Or Mr. King? What happens at the clashes between police and civil society and several ethnic groups? Well, that's something that happens on the U.S. soil. All of us have our own set of domestic problems. But going back to what happened in Russia, yes, we do have crime, and unfortunately, there are some crimes. And at some extent, Russia's statehood is maturing, and there are some side effects, and we persecute people responsible for these crimes.
Okay, not really, because you're responsible for a lot of those murders, sir. But I think if you haven't watched, it's 33 minutes. You can watch it on YouTube. The Chris Wallace interview with Putin, that was great journalism. He held his feet to the fire. So you've got to watch. You've got to watch everything. You have to watch both sides, and then just don't get mired into the pick a side, because there's nuance here. What happened yesterday was, I thought, an embarrassment. I really do. It was an embarrassment. It was Donald Trump's Neville Chamberlain, wanting so badly for this to be true that he holds up a guy and says, hey, listen, we can trust him. No, you can't trust him. But it's because he wanted it to be true. And it was kind of a sad day yesterday. At least I thought it was. But then again, there's other things that are happening. For instance, by him going over, we have a Chris Wallace interview that is really quite interesting. You learn so much about Vladimir Putin. And we also found a guy who's not, quote, fake news. A guy who's not in bed with name the person. I love the fact that the press is upset that Sean Hannity did the interview because he's friendly. Oh, yeah, I'm trying to remember all of the times that Fox got to host the president for an interview. I'm trying to remember all the times that Barack Obama did interviews with Fox. How many times he sat down with Bill O'Reilly. Mr. Putin, there's another thing. I love when you say that your people, you know, we have crime. Yeah. When you brought up Kennedy and Martin Luther King, those were killed by civilians that we caught, and they were just using a standard hunting rifle. Okay? Both of them. Standard hunting rifle. Your opponents are killed with polonium that only you or people like you have access to. We don't even have it. You are the only one that has access to it. It's deep in some sort of Russian vault. If it's not you, somebody's getting into your vault, Vlad, and you should arrest them. There's a difference between what's happening here in the United States with Kennedy and MLK and your opponents that I love the one who threw themselves out their own window, except it wasn't their window. It was the window above their apartment. You know, when I commit suicide, what I like to do is go into the wrong apartment on the wrong floor and then think about it and then mysteriously throw myself off of a roof. Yeah, that one hasn't been solved. I wonder why, Vlad. I wonder why. If you want to learn more about Bitcoin and cryptos, if you think you believe that this is the future, I do. I really think that Bitcoin and cryptos is what it's just gone through is the dot-com crash. And what happened at the dot-com crash? The garbage went away. The pets.com went away. The internet stayed. There is real movement in the crypto world right now. And one of our experts, a guy we trust, is Tika Tiwari. He's with the Palm Beach Letter, and he has been writing and talking and teaching about cryptocurrencies for a while. We're doing a special show, a free life investment training program on July 19th. That is this Thursday at 8 p.m. It's a chalkboard show. I'm going to be interviewing a former hedge fund manager and number one cryptocurrency trading expert, Tika Tiwari. And Tika is going to share some new facts about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies that you don't hear in the media. He's also going to reveal a big event that is unfolding behind the scenes that he believes will push cryptos to new highs. If it's what I think it is, he told me about it a couple of weeks ago. If it's that, it is fascinating and makes a really good case that cryptos could be on the verge of taking off once again. All you have to do is just sign up. It's absolutely free. You just go to BeckCryptoShow.com. Again, free. It's Thursday night, 8 p.m. Do not miss it. It's BeckCryptoShow.com.
Glenn Beck.
Tonight at 5 o'clock, the president yesterday mentioned, well, what about the DNC servers and that deal with Pakistan? Most Americans don't know this because the mainstream media are not covering it. This is one of the most important underreported stories, I think, of the last 2 years. And we lead with that tonight at 5 o'clock only on the Blaze TV.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.